Have you ever heard the expression hunger is the best sauce?
Yes, or the best seasoning.
Yep. So if for me, if hunger is the best
it's sauce, it's a regionalism.
If hunger is the best sauce, Trump's America is like the second best sauce, because I've been eating so much and nonstop.
Well, that's funny. Like, is it all kinds of things? Is it natural things, or is it like
salads, like lots of acai? No, girl, I'm eating bread and potatoes cheese.
Can it please be processed?
Jesus, yes.
Have you had like processed mac and cheese lately? It's bright orange and you can eat the whole thing.
I should probably post a picture on Instagram of my 4-year-old. He ate an entire box of Kraft Mac. It was Annie's Mac, but it's Kraft Mac.
Well, I was going to say that, but I didn't want a product.
No. It's Annie's Mac. Okay. But we call it cheddar noodles at our house. And he ate an entire bowl of it, like the entire box, with a Batman mask on.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
And I got a picture of it, and it was pretty
delicious.
Awesome. Yeah.
I love that stuff. Also, I could eat a whole box when I was like 10 or 11, and I worried if that was a problem. But now that I think about it, it's not that much food.
No, I did that all the time.
Okay, good.
I did that all the time.
Okay, good.
Like, I would come home from school. It would be my after-school snack.
So
it wasn't
good.
Even a meal.
Do you want to know what my weirdest after school snack might have been?
Oh my God, yes.
This is fun.
Was it gefilte fish?
Josh, it's not Jewish. Wow.
I'm sorry.
# polarize me. # apartment living in Queens. It was actually a can of creamed corn.
Ooh, okay.
And I remember my dad coming home. I was like, I had a can of creamed corn for a snack today.
Like out of the can with a spoon?
No, I warmed it up.
Oh, okay.
I warmed it up. Okay. Yeah. But I hate this expression too. Talk about like things I don't like is latchkey kid expressions, because I kind of feel like it's redundant. Like it's not redundant in terms of the name, but in terms of, it's a fact for many people that they come home and their parent isn't there. At the time, it was maybe an anomaly.
Yeah.
But it's pretty frequent, like for a lot of people. But anyway, came home hungry. We didn't have snack bars or like lots of snacks at the ready in our house. It might have been just our house, or it might have also been like the time. Things weren't as geared for kids snack-wise and ready-made-wise, and you always should have something for the go. Like, people didn't even have like to-go cups with them. We didn't have coffee in our hands all the time. We got to work by, you know, walking with our sticks and our stones. We had no
uphill
electricity
both ways.
But anyway, my point is, he was like, well, that's a healthy snack. And really, it's not a healthy snack.
Well,
it's sugar and canned. But compared to maybe like, I don't know, Doritos.
Not that I wasn't listening to everything you were saying right
and
now.
And if you say that, that's exactly
I was thinking.
Not to be a bitch, but.
No, not to be a bitch that my brain was working on something else the whole time you were just talking.
Go ahead.
But no, what you were just saying about being a latchkey kid and how you don't like that expression because it takes for granted that.
You're going to loop this up.
Yes,
aren't
I'm
you?
Completely going to loop it up, because it's assumed that the social norm is that one of the parents is going to be home to let the kid in or pick the kid up from school and have like a bread made fresh from the oven or whatever.
And
right?
Is it assumed that all women will join together to support women?
It sure is, Ronit. It sure fucking is. Welcome to Mouthy, Messy, Mandatory. I'm Katie.
I'm Ronit.
We have a new drinking game for you today. Every time one of us says white supremacy, patriarchy, or white supremacist patriarchy, take a shot, but then have a friend standing by to take you to the hospital, because it's going to be one of these. It's going to be one of these now. Yeah, totally.
Here's a curious thing that I am sorry that we were right about when we asked on our page on Facebook, our Mouthy Messy Mandatory page, you know, who's having a hard time or what are you doing to help support people around you who are having a hard time because of the Kavanaugh hearings and what women in your life might be going through. And then it wasn't just us. Everybody started pouring in on media, on stories about how hard this time is for so many people. So Alexis Grinnell wrote this opinion piece for the New York Times called White Women Come Get Your People. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, okay, this is going to be good. And what she's talking about in this, and it's a really nice short piece, you can read it, it's to the point. Essentially, one of her main theses is betray the patriarchy and your whiteness won't save you, which is basically, and a lot of other people are writing about this, and we've been talking about it, hey, white women, the way you feel right now, I mean, the people who are upset about Kavanaugh, not the people who were voting for him or excited about his appointment, that's how women of color have been feeling for a really long time.
And feeling about white women. That's a really, really big and important point to make. So just to back it up really, really quickly, obviously last weekend, Kavanaugh was confirmed to the Supreme Court, and I think we all took it pretty well, which is to say we still woke up the next day and took care of our shit mostly. Maybe I ate a Chipotle burrito crying in the car, but that's neither here nor there. So polling right before Kavanaugh's appointment showed that White women were pretty much evenly split on whether he should be confirmed. It was 45% said yes, confirm him, and 46% said no, don't confirm him. Conversely, Black women polled, 81% said no, don't confirm him. And 65% of Hispanic women polled said no, don't confirm him. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about like, oh, women against Kavanaugh, Kavanaugh's bad for women, what we really mean is that the women who are against him are predominantly women of color and some white women. Like not, you know, obviously me and my friends and my curated Twitter feed and my feminist thinkers who are published in the New York Times are all against Kavanaugh. But there is a huge population of white women who were totally fine with this guy.
And that's what Alexis Grinnell was saying. She said the gender gap in politics is really a color line. She said women of color and specifically Black women make the margin of difference for Democrats. The voting patterns of white women and white men mirror each other much more closely, she said, and they tend to cast their ballots for Republicans because white women generally benefit from patriarchy.
You want to know why?
Why?
Okay, so let's hop in the Wayback Machine.
Let's do it. Okay. I'm already here.
Quick history lesson. So the founders of the suffragist movement, well, not the founders, the heroes of the suffragist movement, tend to be known, like the ones that we tend to highlight are Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, right?
Yeah.
So these two women are held up as like feminist icons for their work in terms of bringing the vote to white women. What is less well known about them in a lot of white feminist circles is that Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton were also pretty fucking racist, like really quite racist. Letters written in their own hand describe Black people using racial slurs. They continue to perpetuate the idea that Black men will sexually prey on white women. And the reason that this happened, because these two women had been fighting for abolition. They had been fighting for the end of slavery. But once slavery ended, this choice was presented to suffragists and abolitionists by, guess who? The government, which is the seat of power, which is white men and has always been white men. They said to these people, the Black men and the white women, the Black women weren't even in the running yet. One of you is going to get the vote first, basically, and we'll let you guys fight it out and see who it's going to be.
Is it possible? Do the white women throw Black women under the bus?
100%. And so this was maybe like the first time in what I would call modern history that we really see the roots of white feminism choosing white supremacy over feminism. Like, that's it. Because if you were really feminist, you would be choosing the rights of women, all women, women of color, queer women. You'd be choosing the rights of women over the white population that is the most palatable version in your, like, in your mind to get these rights first, or is entitled to get these rights first, or is entitled to the protection against sexual assault most urgently.
Right, of course. That also leads into why white women who go missing or who get murdered are always going to take up more news space and media space than Black people in this country.
Yep, 100%. And even like back at the time that the suffragist movement was going on, the white suffragists were liberal white women. Like they were us. Mm-hmm. And they also told Black suffragist movements, you can't join us. We can't be seen with you because we're afraid it's going to alienate the Southern states.
It's too
against
much.
Our cause.
It's too much.
It's too much. You guys just need to wait your turn.
Too much progressivism.
We're going to go first and then we'll get you later. And then once we got the vote, we kind of didn't do that, right? Like, because once we had been taken care of, once we had again sided with white supremacy and the patriarchy over actual feminism, we were done.
And this plays in politics a lot because a lot of times Black voters, like, for example, with Roy Moore way back in, gosh, when even was that? Do you remember what month that was?
You know what? I feel like time and space are bending. Yeah. It was probably like 3 weeks ago.
Or maybe yesterday.
And it feels like it was 27 years ago.
Well, right. So Black women voters came out in droves to get rid of Roy Moore. He lost because of them. But there's this exhaustion. I mean, I'm a white woman. I'm not speaking for people of color. But from what I'm reading, there is a giant sense of exhaustion on the part of people of color, including and very mainly Black women, about white people constantly relying on them, but not basically adding to the resources in these areas where they need them. And in fact, Stacey Abrams, who we love, she was saying that there's a bigger premium placed on white voters than people of color traditionally. And so the idea that the South was always this swath of area that Democrats, you know, are just going to lose in because there's so many people who are, you know, in the red over there with Republicans is because people haven't been investing in the voters over in the South. And in fact, Juwanna Thompson, she's a Birmingham native, and she launched Woke Vote. Have you heard of it?
No.
Yeah. So Woke Vote, it's W-O-K-E Vote. It's to help galvanize Black millennials to vote. She said there's been a historic underfunding and under-resourcing of Democratic structures in the South. And she says it's not because Black voters don't care. She said progressive groups and Democrats, they just don't think it's worth their time and money to come over to the South. They like to engage in California and Ohio and New Hampshire, but they can't even like come down to Georgia and Mississippi and Alabama and help to, you know, fuel those people and those voters.
Totally. And I think that speaks to, again, like the way that we're taught that certain people are more valuable than other people. And so like a white vote, even though it's the same as a Black vote, mm-hmm. is more valuable, is considered like the thing totally. That you have to chase and seduce.
And it's also this weird circle. It's a cycle because she says these people, these Democrats and progressives will say there's this non-interest on the part of Black voters because the states aren't voting the way that they want them to. She said, quote, you write us off and criticize us for not producing when we lose. You need to own the fact that you created the problem.
Yes. 100%. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's why, like, when everything that happened after Kavanaugh was confirmed really, like, returned us to the same place that we were the day after Trump was elected.
Right. It really did right? feel like that.
It feels like a cycle again where, like, okay, Trump was elected and me and all my white woman friends obviously didn't vote for Trump. But that doesn't change the fact that 52% of white women did vote for this man. And then the same thing was true of Kavanaugh. Me and my friends weren't going for Kavanaugh. We were not pro Kavanaugh. I don't know if you follow on Twitter. My entire Twitter feed for like 7 straight days was like, TikTok motherfucker, I'm coming for you. You know, hands off my uterus. Believe women. Like the whole night I was rage tweeting at all hours of the day and night. But that idea that we're like excused from the actions of our population or our demographic is like such a privileged place to be in, right? Like when you think about the way that we expect to be treated like the exception, because like, well, I privately disagree with this point of view. And I might even social media disagree with this point of view. So I am not like those bad white women who voted for Trump and supported Kavanaugh.
So I know both of us have people in our circle who are not exactly in our circle. We're related to them or we know them through relatives and they don't vote like us. And this is, on a side note, the problem with the echo chamber is that you're just astonished when things don't go the way you and your echo chamber think they should go. You can't believe it. But I've talked to people who wanted Kavanaugh and thought that Dr. Ford was ridiculous or couldn't believe that this was happening. In fact, a woman from a completely older generation than me that I got to talk with was actually criticizing, and I even hate to say this, Dr. Ford's voice in her testimony.
Yep.
You know, she was like, why does she talk like a little girl? Like, that's what she said, and I was sort of just aghast. And then I realized, you know what? If Dr. Ford had had a deep voice or had been more masculine or whatever it is, you know, fill in the blank, then it would have been like, how could she have been harassed? You know, she wouldn't have been assaulted. It's a no win. And of course, at the same time that I'm watching this hearing, I am completely affirmed in my belief for Dr. Ford and astonished by Kavanaugh. It's all been said before, his ridiculous show of bad temperament, etc. But this person that I'm with thinks he's awesome and he's like acing this.
Totally.
So this is what I mean, like the divide.
So I really quickly, what I wanted to say is that example of like women tearing down other women, that is an example of what's called horizontal hostility, right? Where, and this is what happened way back in the Wayback Machine with Susan B. Anthony and the suffragists and the abolitionists. There was like a scrap of power tossed down from on high from the seat of the white supremacist patriarchy, take a shot, and the people underneath had to fight each other for that scrap of power that they were so desperate
totally.
For instead of, and in hindsight now we can look back and say, why did we believe them when they told us that it was an either or? Why
right,
didn't we
actually.
Just say, why not all of us? Why not all of us at the same time?
Right.
And so, I mean, the place that we're at now is like those conversations are happening out there. Those conversations are happening. Like Ijeoma Oluo recently tweeted something to that effect, which was basically like,
Welcome.
This is how it feels. What are we going to do together now?
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we really wanted to talk about was the idea of, like, how do you approach these conversations when you find them? Because hopefully they're happening. And if they're not happening around you, you might need to start them. Because I guarantee you that all of your friends, you know, if you're listening to this show, chances are you share many of our values in terms of feminism and progressivism and anti-racism. But probably in your circle, almost certainly, I'm going to go right the fuck out there and say it is definitely true that in your circle, you have people who are calling it the 1 year anniversary of Me Too and completely erasing Tarana Burke's contribution. And they don't understand why that's a big deal. You have people out there who are sharing that meme that went around that women and girls should be kneeling for the national anthem. And they don't understand why that's not okay, right?
So I visited Women of Color for Progress, which is this amazing site, and you should go there because there's so many tools and so many resources for people who are white to help. Here's a couple of little soundbite worthy tips for people who are trying to be allies for women of color. Don't lead, follow. Speak up, not over. Don't walk away if you make a mistake. And they actually have this example that, so if you're in a situation where you're a white woman and you're trying to help the people around you and understand better what their situations are, you get expressed by a person of color that maybe what you said or did was maybe insensitive racially or biased. You can take a step back and listen. And on the site, they say, we understand the inclination to defend yourself and your integrity is there. But being called out for insensitivity is not necessarily an indictment of your character.
100%.
Or your goodness as a human. It's meant to highlight the ways we all display our bias. And this is the thing about bias. Half the time, maybe more, you don't even realize you are biased because you've been steeping in the same place. Now, here's two other things I want to add. Do patronize businesses owned by women of color and help promote them. And do stand up for a woman of color who is being discriminated against. So as an ally, you're oftentimes less likely to face negative consequences than if this woman of color stood up alone. So this is as simple as speaking up if a woman of color, or any woman in fact, has been interrupted in a meeting, or if someone has taken credit away from an idea or the hard work a woman has put in, like Tarana Burke. Or if a woman of color is criticized even for wearing her hair natural. These are all examples that they give.
So let's take like a closer look at a conversation that you're likely to interact with in the near future if you haven't already. And that is this meme that's been going around. The first time I saw it, and you know, it's the internet, so we don't really know like where it was born. But the one that I saw originally shared was from a guy named Al Richardson, who's a white journalist. And he said, the next time the national anthem is played, every woman and girl in this country should take a knee. So let's talk about that and understand that I am talking to you as a white woman who gets why this sounds like a good idea at first, right? So like I 100% am disappointed and disillusioned and disgusted with our country, and kneeling in front of the flag during the national anthem to demonstrate your engagement with the country and yet your disapproval of the country feels like a really solid symbol. And the reason it feels like that is because somebody already did it and has been doing it for years. And that
I see where you're going,
right?
With this,
okay,
Katie.
So black athletes, notably Colin Kaepernick, but black athletes and allies of those black athletes all over athletics and at all levels of athletics have been kneeling for the national anthem for years in order to protest police brutality and systemic oppression of people of color in this country. Now, those people didn't get a lot of mainstream support at first. Really, really did not. In fact, the president of the United States said they should be fired. In fact, he probably said they didn't deserve to live in America for kneeling in front of the flag.
America.
And in fact, he wrangled a bunch of NFL owners to say that they would fine and punish and suspend players who knelt in this peaceful, nonviolent protest. And Americans, these fans of these athletes, shouted down these people as being hysterical and disrespectful of the troops and all of these incredibly out there, having nothing to do with the original idea that, hey, police violence is real against communities of color and this is unacceptable and needs to change.
And this is a way I can draw attention to it.
Exactly. And I mean, I even found an article about a high school athletic team. I can't remember. I think it was a basketball team. Some of them knelt for the national anthem, and this high school athletic team got booed at home
Well,
from the stand, like, come on, you guys. Like, so this, okay. So all this to say.
Fledgling activism.
Exactly.
Like, dashed.
I mean, and all this to say, like, I get why this feels like the right move. However, unless you are kneeling for the national anthem to protest police violence against people of color and systemic oppression against people of color, you are colonizing a movement that you did not support until your ass was in the hot seat. Okay? So it's not okay.
Okay, let me add a little question for
Please.
You. A thought question here. So what if the people who are advocating for this have always supported the athletes who have taken a knee? They're not just bystanders and like gawkers who just want to be like, oh no, we'll take a knee. What if these people who are advocating this have always supported athletes? I mean, how do you know what that sample size is?
I would say if the people who are talking about this have always supported the athletes and have always supported the opposition of this systemic oppression and the police violence, the murder of black people by police, they should not need anyone to explain to them why it's not fucking okay for a bunch of Johnny come latelys to show up and start kneeling for the anthem about something completely unrelated. It's like if you were kneeling for the anthem at work, if your work weirdly played the national anthem all the time, okay? Say you work for one of our government buildings and Fox News is the only station you can get. No, just kidding. Not really, though. Okay, but say you were kneeling for the anthem to protest sexual violence and sexual harassment in your workplace. And everyone who walked by every day laughed at you and rolled their eyes at you. And you started getting cut out of meetings and you stopped getting good assignments at work. And you started to struggle and you didn't get your bonus and your boss wouldn't talk to you. And you maybe in another department, you had another friend who was kneeling with you. And she was doing the same thing. She was getting the same abuse, right? And the same total rejection. And then one day, this Chad in your office says, do you guys realize that we use a shitload of plastic straws? It's so bad for the environment. I feel like I need to kneel for the anthem in order to protest the plastic straws. And all the guys are like, yeah, that's not cool. So suddenly they're all kneeling for plastic straws. And you're like, I'm sorry. I mean, not that you're against saving the earth. Not that you're against less waste. But that's not what this is about. And you have been paying for that statement that you've been making with your career, with your like social currency, with all of your opportunities, with your mental health, with your physical safety. I mean, you have been paying a price for this for years. And then they just like hopped on and took it and ran in a completely different direction. It's not okay. You'd be furious. You'd be angry. So let's have the same gesture of respect. Let's come to the table with the same respectfulness of this movement that we should really care about. Because bottom line, like you said at the very beginning of the episode from that New York Times article, if we, like our whiteness will not save us from the patriarchy, right?
That's right.
The seat of power in this country has always been male and it has always been white. And if white men were protecting women, we would not have Trump in the White House. If white men really cared about protecting women, we would not be worried about Roe versus Wade being overturned right now. So the people that we need to be defending right now are not the men that Kellyanne Conway said, remind us of our sons and our dads and our brothers and our cousins. Mm. Like, yeah, I know they remind us of those people. And even though you may have a great relationship with all of those people, you may know, you may work with the wokest bros on earth and they vote for feminist, queer, women of color, right and left. Okay. That may be your reality, but statistically, demographically, that's not where we are as a country. Stop voting with white men. Like stop, like go back in time and tell Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton, these men are not going to help you. They are not on your team. They don't get it. They are on their own team and they want you working for them. They want you having that horizontal hostility with other women who disagree with you, with other women of color. They want you tearing each other down so they can stay up here in the seat of power. Like go back. We have a chance to change that right now, but it means we have to like fundamentally shift the way we approach these conversations and stop choosing our sons and husbands and brothers over our sisters. Right? Okay. So that's the thing about the national anthem. And a little bit more.
I want to add good news, bad news really quick, which is the bad news, of course, and this is all tied to the Kavanaugh, is Collins voting to pass him, which was like, I really was upset about that. I saw her talking and I thought, huh. And then when I heard what the bottom line was, I just could not, I was so irritated. I mean, beyond irritated. Anyway, that's part. But the good news, in my opinion, a good little notch up on the ladder of possible joy in the future is that Taylor Swift finally took a position.
Okay.
And decided. And actually, if you think about it, she kind of did it strategically because she came out with this big Instagram post about why she was going to vote Democrat in Tennessee and why Marsha Blackburn was a really bad choice and against women's rights, et cetera, and kind of just pandering to Trump. And then at the Music Awards, she also said it again on one of her many, you know, congratulations award speeches, you know, when she received like her fourth award, get out and vote. And she was basically taking a position, which, say what you want about her, what did 65,000 people register for vote after that within like 24 hours?
Totally. So I have always been hypercritical of Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Like opting out of politics because it is, again, the height of privilege, right? To be able to just say, like, I don't need to vote. I'm fine.
Or to let maybe white supremacists think that you are their princess, their Aryan princess.
Yeah, there's a whole other thing about, the Taylor Swift Aryan princess thing. But, like, not that all is forgiven or forgotten.
No. But,
like, I'm glad you're here. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is today.
Right.
Thanks for coming.
Yep.
Okay. Glad you're here. Glad you're on board.
And
glad
also, she was really, really vocal about LGBTQ rights. I mean, she kind of put it all out there. For her, it was really a big deal. And I was thrilled to see it. Because think about if she had come out finally politically and said, vote Republican. I mean, think about how much, like, your head would be on fire.
Honestly, we probably would have done a different episode today. Yeah. No, I mean, because that's a really big deal.
But we needed that. Like, I feel like we needed that. I mean, I needed that. It's not the best all-time everything, so, but anything helps me right now.
This speaks to this idea of, like, collecting white women. Like, white women, go collect your aunties and your mommies and your sisters and your friends, right?
Yes.
There are two different ways to collect white people. One is to change their hearts and minds, and that's extremely difficult to do.
Of course, as I mentioned with the person sitting in my living room watching the hearings, I was like, I can't do anything here.
It's
like,
hard.
I can't.
Well, have you ever listened to the Dave Ramsey debt, like, radio show? It's
no.
Like a personal finance. Well, anyway, I have a metaphor for this.
Ooh,
so
ooh.
if you have a lot of debt and a lot of different credit cards, the best strategy for getting out of debt is to pay off the card with the lowest balance first. And then go to the next higher balance and the next highest balance until you're, like, working on that last final big balance. And the reason that this works is that psychologically it's, like, really good for you to get a win under your belt. And then you can, like, knock one out and go on to the next one, versus you'll probably get discouraged if you try to do the biggest one first. So that's kind of how it is in terms of winning hearts and minds of people who maybe have really good intentions but are really saying some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
Like, you have to start with the people who are the least dug into the fucked up shithole. Right? Like, the lowest balance on the credit card, the fucked up shithole credit card.
I thought you were going to go with this, like, you can find a little foothold in a conversation with someone like this that could somehow lead to something somewhere.
Totally. And that's the labor that we're responsible for doing. Not because, like, all white women listen to white women, but because
clearly.
Because we're most likely to socialize.
And she's more likely to put some stock in what I say versus someone she doesn't know at all from an entirely different demographic.
Totally. I mean, and, like, you're more likely to be related to them. You're more likely to share a workplace with them. Like, that's just they're our responsibility because we are the same demographic and we travel in the same circles in a lot of ways. And that work of, like, finding the common ground to, like, plant that seed and come back to and, like, nurture that seed, that is the hard, really thankless work where you have to knock on that door 20,000 times.
Yeah, you're right.
And then on the 20,001st time, she's going to be like, oh, I get it now. Hopefully, right?
Well, I think persistence.
Yeah. But then the other part of collecting white women is not conversion or, like, empathy building. It's activation and inspiration. It's like, how many of my friends didn't vote in the 2016 election? I know I have some.
You do?
I know I do.
Wow. I haven't even asked.
I know I do. Well, because, okay, get this. 74 million women cast a ballot for the president in 2016. There are 167 million women in America.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, keep in mind that those are just women. Those are not just white women. But think, like, that's almost 100 million women who didn't vote. We need to be talking about this with our friends and our family members and saying, you know, it's really, really important. It's important to me. It's important to my friends. Please vote. I'm not going to tell you how to vote. If you want to talk to me about it, I would love to share my thoughts. But you need to be registered to vote, and you need to vote.
Ooh, speaking of politics and voting, I have a cute little part of our quiz I can start with.
Oh my God.
It's quiz time.
Quiz time.
Katie, what percentage of black women voted for Hillary Clinton? A, 32%. B, 59%, or C, 94%?
94%.
You got it. And guess what it was for Latinas?
What?
86%.
Yow! Woo!
Okay, here's another one related to voting and office.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Okay, more than 70 black women filed for state and local offices in which of the following states? A, California. B, Alabama. C, New York. Oh, she's stumped. She's actually
going to go with Alabama.
You're right! It was Alabama!
Exciting.
Okay, good. Okay, this is about digital blackface.
Ooh.
Ooh. We did an episode on this. We should just recap what digital blackface is. That is when you use GIFs or emojis in a skin tone unlike yours, especially when they are darker skinned.
Yes.
Okay, so this is like three truths and a lie.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so this is mine. Using...
So wait, three truths and a lie about digital blackface.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, yep, yep. You ready?
Ready.
Okay. Using dark-skinned emojis when you're white is called digital blackface. And it A, connotes a lack of self-awareness. B, can be seen as appropriating. C, the emoji skin tones are not based on race. The colors were chosen using the Fitzpatrick scale, which is a dermatological scale of tone. And D, a darker-skinned person using a light emoji represents the same systemic disenfranchisement as white people using dark-skinned emojis.
All right. I think D made me barf in my mouth a little bit.
Right.
D is like reverse racism,
yeah,
which is adorable.
So, right. So, like, if reverse racism is like saying that if white people aren't getting the same rights as black people, then that's a racism.
No, it's like anytime a person of color says, white people X... People are like, reverse racism. No.
No.
Because racism is not having an opinion about a skin color. Racism is a systemic oppression of an entire group of people based on their race. So you have never been oppressed for being white. Don't tell me that some kids teased you on the basketball team. And do not tell me that you couldn't join the all-black fraternity because it was an all-black. Just don't. Okay, just don't. You weren't oppressed. You weren't welcome there, but that doesn't mean you were oppressed.
You weren't disenfranchised. You weren't systemically oppressed.
Not all spaces belong to you.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's okay. Okay, what is yours? Do you have something for me?
Well, I have a, is it feminist or is it white feminist?
Nice.
Okay. So you are on social media and somebody posts a meme celebrating the 1 year anniversary of hashtag Me Too. Is that meme feminist or white feminist?
That's white feminist because it's over a year.
Exactly, because Tarana Burke started it 10 years ago. And we don't want to erase 10 years of her labor by pretending that Alyssa Milano invented it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's
or
how
that
history,
Rose McGowan.
Yeah, that's how history gets rewritten, people.
That's right.
It's lame. Don't do it. Call it out. Call that shit out. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So you're on that same thread and somebody says, oh, but Tarana Burke actually started the Me Too movement 10 years ago. It's really important that we give her credit for her work in this field and not just erase history and give Alyssa Milano all the credit for Me Too. And somebody else responds, you know, I just really feel like we all need to come together right now. And that kind of nitpicking is really divisive. And what we need to do is stop eating each other alive and come together and unite.
Hmm.
Is that feminism or white feminism?
I think that's white feminism.
Oh, really? Why that?
Well, because it kind of still erases Tarana Burke.
It's 100% still not about Tarana Burke.
Yep, yep.
Also,
you like basically cover over her place and what she did.
Totally.
Like, let's smush it together.
Exactly. And somebody saying, hey, actually, I think we should include people of color. That's not divisive. What's divisive is you saying, no, I refuse to include people of color.
That's also
and even
like,
talking about
that's
it
also
hurts
like
my
saying,
feelings.
I don't see race. I don't see color.
Totally.
Like, I don't see differences in skin tones. That's not true.
100%.
Right.
Yes.
Right. You have more?
No, I just had those two.
That
I just
is
had the thread.
End of our show. I'm doing the jazz hands.
Hold on, let me make sure. Come find us on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/mouthymessymandatory. Please come find us. Join the conversation. We love, love, love to hear from you. Thank you so much for listening to Mouthy Messy Mandatory. This is a large network podcast. Peace out, Cub Scout. That's it.
That's
it. I just wanted to double check. Yep.
Got it.
Yep,
check.
I really don't want it to be over, do you?